Welcome to the Reaction Podcast with me, Ian Martin, editor of Reaction. I'm joined by Tim Montgomery. Tim, we are talking the night or the day after the night before, after the twin by-election defeats for the Conservatives. How do you see it? I mean, they were not priced in, but they were expected to lose, I think it's fair to say, certainly in Wakefield. Though they did have some hopes, didn't they, in the Tories yesterday that they might just about cling on in Devon, yeah. But they didn't. But in the event, it's a really crushing defeat for Boris Johnson, isn't it?
It isn't at all, Ian. Why are you talking Britain down? The government has a plan and it's going to stick to it. These things happen in midterm, but people still love Boris. Why are you off message?
No, hearing the most ridiculous excuses that the cabinet are increasingly giving, I think they really aren't helping themselves. I think part of the problem the party has now is actually it's not taking people seriously. It's treating them as fools. And I think we spoke the other day, Ian, about Boris going to speak to a donors dinner, you know, some of the most important people in the Conservative Party, if you regard them fundraising, that their funds for the party is important. And he was telling them, you know, we're cutting taxes, we're slashing regulation, we're building houses, we're controlling immigration. And certainly donors I know from, you know, that meeting were looking at each other and saying, does he believe this? He's trying to convince himself or what? But look, I was very struck after the vote of no confidence that quite a few of the people who voted for Boris Johnson were nonetheless absolutely determined to get rid of him before the next election. And we spoke a little bit about that in our last podcast. Mm. But so last night I decided to talk, to sort of make contact on WhatsApp with 10 of them and just sort of say, you know, I'm doing these media rounds. You know, if you've got time, tell me, you know, what you make of it all confidentially. Mm. And interestingly, sort of finally responding to what you've just said, four of them said, I think we might actually hold on to Tiverton. And they were saying that because, you know, perhaps it's a little bit of intuition that they've, you know, from what they picked up on the doorstep. But I think they were hearing that from Tory HQ. Mm. And that, I think, talking to some of them again this morning, that's what really is unnerving some of them, because it's clear that Tory HQ doesn't really know what's going on the ground either, and it all feeds into the fact we selected someone who supported a second referendum in Wakefield. You know, that's basic incompetence, you know, in candidacy selection. Mm. And we are, as a party, really ruining our reputation for competence. And that's why we cannot dismiss these by-election defeats as just, you know, a typical midterm blues.
Yeah, you did a really good impersonation there, Tim, of a ultra loyalist Boris supporter or cabinet minister, but actually on the ultra loyalist backbench Tory MP, there are not really that many of them left, and there's a pretty tight knit group around the Prime Minister.
Yeah,
it does just seem to be, and I've observed this a couple of times in the last few weeks since the no confidence vote, when you talk to his people and you hear what Boris is saying, there is this denial. He's in denial. It's almost as though he's constructed an alternative sort of fantasy version of political reality, and in this alternative universe the Tory press as he sees it, or newspapers who he would expect to be more aligned with the Conservative Party are being beastly to him. And what's got into all of these people? Can't they see that, in Boris terms, things are going brilliantly? It's just a bit of a sort of midterm slump. Margaret Thatcher had to put up with this sort of stuff. And, you know, don't be so frit. Just get on with it and everything will be fine. Now, that's, I think, a tin-eared response to the vote of no confidence itself. It suggests that Boris thinks he's got away with it, and so there's no point really properly listening to people and try to work out why people are aggrieved. I think it also just underestimates the extent to which, and this will come to the resignation of Oliver Dowden in a moment, just the seriousness of the situation that the government is in. Yes, it is true that Margaret Thatcher lost lots of by-elections before, but she lost by-elections before 83 and before 87 and went on to win those elections. But it should be absolutely plain the difference there. Margaret Thatcher genuinely did, no matter what anyone listening to this thinks of, she genuinely had, like it or loathe it, a really robust, coherent plan of and program of reforms, which she was working her way through. I don't think that can be said of the current incumbent, even by his best friends, really. And on inflation and the economy, she had a pretty clear analysis. Again, love it or loathe it, she had a clear analysis and a plan, which evolved, but a view of the world and a view of economics and central banks and trade and globalization, or what wasn't then called globalization, open markets, which is really coherent, which she stuck to. And also, in both of those cases, 83 and 87, she was on the crest of a rising wave, which was that the economy was recovering. The economy wasn't just recovering from the short-term recession, it was recovering from the long after effects of 1973, the oil crisis, the disasters of that befell the economy in the 1970s. So there was a sense in both cases that it was rising, it was emerging out of disaster. The opposite is the case now, and he seems incapable. Maybe it's because he's not particularly interested in economics, but he seems incapable of grasping of understanding the seriousness of what's coming on inflation, on mortgages, on food costs, on energy. The situation is really, really worrying. So he sits at that. That's what strikes me. He seems to be in denial. And Oliver Dowden's resignation letter is, I think, delivered as a wake-up call.
And there are rumours that there was going to be a reshuffle before the summer. I don't think Oliver Dowden was ever comfortable as party chairman, and he's much more of a policy guy than a campaigning guy. And he probably wasn't long for the world of cabinet. And so you could argue, and I'm sure the people around Boris, who I'm afraid love to trash anyone who dares to criticise them, will say as much about Oliver Dowden. But most Tory MPs know actually they like Oliver Dowden. He's quite a warm person, and maybe his resignation will not be a big deal in the country at large, but it will certainly, I think, cause many Conservative MPs to pause for thought. Because my mum would never swear. She never swears, so she uses a swear word, like the biggest thing. I would probably have some minor heart attack or something. When someone of Oliver Dowden's sort of caution says, in his letter, "I will remain loyal to the Conservative Party," but explicitly does not say that includes being loyal to the Prime Minister. That's the equivalent of him punching someone in the face or something on the street. And we haven't had a cabinet. We in the May era, we seem to know we went by without a cabinet resignation, but this cabinet has stuck by Boris. And I'd like to think if the Prime Minister wasn't now in Rwanda, perhaps one or two might have followed Dowden. But I think some will definitely hesitate, because it probably won't look quite good form to resign when the PM is out of the country.
And he's out the country because there's the Commonwealth meeting and various other things, and then there's the big NATO summit, key geopolitical event next week, where the expansion of NATO will be discussed, and redeployment and scaling up the defence of NATO's eastern flank against Russian aggression. So that meeting is critical. But to be out of the country, I take your point, Tim, about maybe cabinet ministers staying their hand as a result of him not being here. But I think in terms of other plotting, the fact that he's away, it's a really suboptimal time for a prime minister
Completely,
trying to save his job to be out the country. I mean, the point I would make on Oliver Dowden is absolutely, as you say, whether or not he was comfortable as Tory party chairman and more of a policy guy, probably, but he's someone with really deep roots in the Tory party or the Tory, the wider Tory family. And I was very struck at the time when they briefed against him, and there was a number 10 really coordinated briefing against Dowden, saying that effectively, it was in the Mail on Sunday, effectively that he was for the high jump and that he would take the blame for the be blamed by the Prime Minister for the by-election defeat. That struck me as a really foolish thing to do, because it actually ends up having probably helped prompt him to resign. But it indicates again that he and some of those closest to him just don't have a proper understanding of Conservative Party dynamics and friendships. And Dowden is someone, when that story landed, someone senior in the Tory party said to me, that is really stupid. He is popular. He's not a big name with the public, but in terms of the voluntary party, the parliamentary party, he's someone who's seen as a sensible, mainstream, loyal party person. And he's now resigned. What do you think, Tim, happens next? Do you think this is just another of those things where the media gets itself worked up, but Boris is still there in 10 days' time? Or is there a possibility of things moving quicker than that?
I don't know. I really don't know, but I'm sure he's going. I'm absolutely sure he's going. You know, you've just given another reason. People observe the way Oliver Dowden has been treated. They observe the way that Rishi Sunak was treated. They notice how anybody who dared Jeremy Hunt, the leader of the Scottish Party, they've noticed that if you ever dare to suggest that the Emperor doesn't have any clothes, you know, they will attempt to destroy you. I think the party absolutely now knows that the people in Downing Street and around Downing Street aren't Team Tory, they are Team Boris, and that they have no interest in the long-term health of this party, or particularly the country. And at some point soon, he must be got rid of to save the Conservative Party. I am convinced he will go. But I have such a poor record at exact predictions and time. I'm not going to specify a date. But it is awful. I was at a gathering of the New Culture Forum the other night, 40 Conservatives, and played a little sort of parlour game and went round the little groups and said, what's the economic policy of this government? And partly prompted by some of the questions you raised in the last podcast, Ian. Most couldn't answer, and those that did had a completely contradictory attempts at explaining it. And Mrs. Thatcher wouldn't have allowed that. Yeah, as you say, you may have disagreed with her recipe, but she absolutely knew, she thought about it, her ministers had thought about it, she'd probed those ministers, etc. You know, this is a government absolutely adrift. And I think because of the climate of fear that Downing Street have instilled, ministers are almost frightened to even try and address that as well, because what will that mean for them if they speak slightly out of turn and say to the Prime Minister, perhaps we should do a little bit more, but perhaps this isn't the right way. You know, it's very depressing, because competence and patriotism and seriousness about business has always been probably at the heart of the Conservative Party's electoral success and service of the country, and it's being trashed by this government.
And they do seem to be operating on the assumption, which I think is probably mistaken, that the Prime Minister is powerful enough, even after losing the support of 148 of his colleagues, which is probably, that 148 is probably more like 158 or...
Oh, I'd go a lot higher than that.
Yeah.
I'd go a lot higher than that, yeah.
So maybe it's higher than that. But to that being the case, the Prime Minister should have spent the last few weeks trying to build bridges with other bits of the Tory party. That would be the logical thing to do. But to assume that he's in a strong enough position to fire the Chancellor or to fire the party chairman, who's just quit anyway, who's beat him to it, suggests a slight detachment from reality. Let me put, just for one second though, the case for the defence, right? You did your impersonation of a cabinet minister saying there's nothing to see here, everyone move along, It's midterm, these things happen. Okay, so several people have said this to me, while not senior Conservatives, while not doubting that there are problems post-party gate and difficulties on the economy. The case for the defence runs something like this. Look, he's had a hell of a lot to deal with. COVID, he couldn't have anticipated. There's now the war in the Ukraine. There's so much going on. He's been unlucky. Yes, the economy is going to take a hit, but actually, inflation might fall away next year, and you could get a situation where the economic disaster turns out not to be as bad as people like me fear that it's going to be globally. So the Tory party in the country and the world economy catches some form of lucky break. And in the ensuing recovery, well, what do you know? Boris Johnson is still there and he's, quotes, a winner, as a large Tory, major Tory donor put it to me. He is a winner. And in those circumstances, Labour don't look ready for office and the Tories can win 1992 style. So stop having an attack of the vapours now. Cling on to Boris and hope for the best. How does that sound?
Well, Ian, you did a really good effort and I haven't had a better attempt, but if I was your politics tutor, I'm afraid you'd be sitting next summer. Certainly if I was a politics tutor of a conservative disposition, because here's the thing. Okay, maybe the pandemic didn't allow you to do great reforms. I don't buy that. I think I think I said last week, William Beveridge managed to write, his report on the welfare state during World War II. We knew that the government really didn't have a plan even before the pandemic struck. And the pandemic should have been an opportunity to do lots of big things, maybe even accelerate the big society and stuff like that. But anyway, even if you say, okay, well, it was too hard to do anything big. Well, I was under the impression that this was a Conservative government and taxes are going up. The civil service seems to be in the grip of, an ideology on trans that is completely alien to most of the British, but certainly the Conservative voter. We can't, deport illegal immigrants. We have a climate change agenda where we seem to be gold plating regulations more than almost any other country in the world, disabling our economy. Home ownership rates are in decline. It's really hard to make the case that the great achievement of Boris winning that majority of 80 has been completely squandered. And so, yeah, okay, I actually do believe we can win the next election. I think Labour MPs can be defeated or held back. I think we could see 20 losses to the Lib Dems. I think they're going to be a much harder opponent. So, yeah, the electability argument isn't the strongest one against Boris. The big one is, what's the point? What's the point of being in power if all these things happen? We might as well have Labour in power or a new Labour type of Labour anyway.
Do you think, you've been around the Tory party for a long time, Tim.
You'll be calling me a veteran or something in a minute.
You founded Conservative Home, so you've seen the party up close for a long time. Do you think they now are capable of coming to a conclusion that actually it might really be, it's not just about winning the next general election or losing the next general election, that maybe there is a country before party moment, and that even if the electorate has decided that the Tories need to be flung out, and that I think is the key thing from the by-elections, is that you can see this trend that's been building, which is that the voters have agency, and voters have worked out once again, as they did in the 90s, how to utilise tactical voting, so how to vote anti-Tory. That's the real message of it. Some people are saying, oh, it's not as bad for the Tories as it appears, or not as bad as it appears for the Tories, because Labour's vote didn't go up by as much as you'd have expected in Wakefield, and it's to do with an independent candidate, and actually it's all about stay at home, and of course there's a stay at home factor, but history shows that once voters have stayed at home once, they can stay at home again, and then they can start to entertain the possibility of voting for someone someone else. They don't automatically all flip back. And it's also virtually impossible to work out in a by-election. The electorate is moving. The electorate is moving around. You know, the demographics are changing. And people are sort of jumping around all over the place. The main point is, do you win or do you lose? And the Tories have lost both, and Labour lost its deposit in Devon, and the Lib Dems lost their deposit in Wakefield in Yorkshire, which illustrates the point I was making there, that the voters have worked out how to vote anti-Tory and how to utilise the voting system. So that's pretty catastrophic for the Tories. But my point there about country before party, isn't it a case of, and a Tory MP put it to me rather brilliantly, that it should be about how to lose? The Tory party might win the next election, as you say, it's perfectly possible. But if it doesn't, does it lose 97 style, as he put it to me, or does it lose 1964 style, which is narrowly, but respectably? And I think that's the question, really, that the Tory party has to answer. Does it want a prime minister for the next 18 months to 2 years who can put party to one side for a second, can just restore some order in terms of decision-making, the seriousness of what's coming on inflation, energy, food, families being tipped into poverty, low growth, low productivity, is I'm more worried about the economy than I've been since 2008. It cannot all be laid at the door of this government, but the problems absolutely are not so serious that it requires this orderly, decent government.
There's so much in that, you know, we've both got other things to go on to, so I'm gonna have to
what you're telling me is you've got to go and do the BBC or Sky.
I'm a media tart today, and I've not had any sleep. So I'm going to be the first person to ever fall asleep in the middle of a BBC news when I'm speaking.
Other than the viewers.
Yeah, of course. Well, they fall asleep when I'm speaking. But just two things very, very briefly is that, yes, it's a global phenomenon, and this may be a first and last time I ever do this, but a really intriguing Andrew Adonis tweet the other day, noting that because France had built so many more houses than we had, the average income of the lowest, the poorest quarter of French people has now really overtaken the similar income of British people. Yeah. British people haven't spent such a large proportion of their income on housing. So yes, you can't do everything to compensate for a global phenomenon, but we really have surrendered on housing, and we aren't increasing, you know, the number of people who have a stake in the economy and society by addressing, and that's been a waste. And I slightly misunderstand what you're saying. I don't know, Ian, but I don't think we can afford to lose the next election. I think we can win it, and it is because of the country you came from. I love the United Kingdom, and the next election isn't a choice between a Labour majority government and a Conservative majority government. There's no way Labour are going to get enough seats in Scotland to, you know, get there. The choice is between a Conservative government and one held hostage by Nicola Sturgeon. And that really does terrify me. And that's why we have to get into a place where the Conservatives can win and deserve to win.
Well, we'll see how they do.
resignation.
What you've just illustrated there is, I mean, that's another case for the defence for Boris. That's what his supporters will say. Look, only he can avert that situation because he's a winner. But he doesn't, I think we can agree, doesn't look like a winner today, this week. Tim Montgomery, thank you very much for joining us. Fascinating insights into what the hell's going on in politics. I'm going to let you go and be on the BBC, Sky and various other channels and get on with your day. If you're not a subscriber to Reaction, become a subscriber. You get my weekly newsletter. I've actually just completed it and about to send it out to subscribers. It's really easy to subscribe, and you get my newsletter, all of the brilliant writing from the team on Reaction, and we also produce this podcast. So until next time, thank you very much for listening to the Reaction podcast.
Bye-bye.